Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics World, and this post is covering finance and property news. It's Tuesday, but it's our Monday rant with Edwin. Edwin, hello, nice to see you. 24 hours late, but back nevertheless.
Yeah, better late than never, but you can't say better late than never with the numbers. I mean, HIA is saying we really need 1.9 million new dwellings in order to taper down the heat in the property market. Are we going to get there? Is one of the questions. Will we get there? How are we going to get there? This is the $64 million question, Martin.
Well, it is an important point, and of course, there's a lot sloshing around in the background here. We had, of course, the RBA come out and say that probably the next rate rise is going to be up. We had the latest data from Cotality suggesting that some of the property price momentum was easing back. But then on the other hand, we've got a lot of demand. In some areas, I'm still seeing it very strong, and a lot of people quite desperate to get into the market. We're still not building enough. And the latest from the HAF is that some of those contracts that they negotiated, they've had to unnegotiate because things have changed. So we've got this massive morass below the surface, political interference left, right and centre. And I think a lot of people are quite confused, and perhaps it's no surprise that vendors are walking away and saying, well, maybe I won't sell at the moment, or maybe I've got to sell at the moment. And prospective purchasers also scratching their head a little, saying, I'm not sure what to do, really. It's a mess, Edwin. It's a mess.
Yeah, look, it is a mess, and nothing's going to change for the next 3 to 5 years. That's the unfortunate thing. That's the unfortunate crux of the story, Martin, and things are only going to get worse, as I keep on saying. The unfortunate thing is that things aren't broken, and you've got to really break things before you can fix them. Whilst we're going on this trajectory to the current government policies and those that are supported by the opposition, things aren't going to change. If anything, it's going to get worse. Unfortunate things have happened in Sydney over the weekend, which is devastating. But it's still not going to deter the current government, the current migration policies from continuing to drag in more people from all over the world. Because what we need now is what the governments need from both sides of the coin. They need those that have got money to invest in order to keep the SMEs operating, because that's where they make most of the coin from in terms of taxes. The small and medium-sized enterprises are absolutely hammered with taxes, and there's more legislation around the corner that's going to absolutely obliterate the real estate industry and many other industries along with it, which is accountancy practices, financial institutions, and also the law firms. Now we know that what's coming there, and more layers of policy, more layers of legislation, and more money that the small business operators and owners have to fork out in order to keep the doors open. There's no tapering down of commercial rents. Commercial rents are staying, and in a lot of parts, they're even going up because people have got this foolish idea that, hey, hold on a minute, I may lose my full-time business. Let me just start my full-time employment. Let me just start a business because it seems like the right thing to do. And before you know it, you had five coffee shops within a suburb, and now you've got 50. I mean, people are trying all sorts of things. Cryptocurrencies, shit coins, you name it. They'll try in order to make a quid, because that's how desperate people are. And people in the industry are taking advantage of these circumstances, unfortunately. That's the unfortunate thing, Martin, is we've been played. We've been played not only over the last 5-6 years, we've been played for the last 2.5 decades. So until things change, the data is the data. Our data points, my data points that I share with my followers, with my clients, our extended arm globally now is that, yeah, your data points that you share and that we're privy to as well, with your on the ground surveys that you do, which is more contemporary, which is more up to date than all the other data that seems to lag. And then we've got Louis Christopher's data as well, which shows a totally different, an opposing view to what the mainstream may be saying or not saying. But we know that all that is orchestrated, and this is what we've got to focus. We just got to focus on what we used to talk, you and I used to talk about a few years back, and that's real data.
Yeah, I think data is really, really important, and there isn't a lot of it around now. More and more of it is being filtered and rationalized or delayed, which makes it very hard to really track what's going on. And if you look at some of the property portals, more and more information is being obscured there as well. No disclosure of price or price on application, all of those things. So it is harder and harder for people to try and actually understand what's really going on the ground. It's interesting that some of the banks are now coming out and saying they're going to be rate rises next year. I believe NAB and CBA are both calling for rate rises. ANZ still calling for no change. And I think a couple of other organizations are talking about Westpac, I think, is talking about a rate cut or two. So, nobody quite knows on the rates, the trajectory of rates ahead. What we do know is that the MyEFO is coming out tomorrow, and the MyEFO will be more spending. It's worth just reflecting, Edwin, on the fact that the trajectory on spending is not great. We're still actually, from a government perspective, spending more than we were, and the revenue take is not tracking necessarily as fast, which means that there's a bigger deficit potentially. Now, of course, Chalmers already announced that the electricity subsidies won't be continued, and there are other initiatives that are coming as well. So they're going to spend more. And it's this disconnect that I'm finding with, one, what the government is saying and doing, secondly, what the industry is saying and doing, and thirdly, what ordinary people are trying to navigate. And of course, you mentioned Louis Christopher, and you and he caught up recently. I saw this photograph, which I didn't realize that Louis was so tall. That's quite, was he standing on a box? but it's interesting because he, of course, comes up with his forecasts for what is going to happen. It's quite interesting that he's running now scenarios for 2026 with a baseline scenario. You can see there that varies, Sydney, 3 to 6% in the baseline scenario. The other scenarios also, but actually, there's no negative numbers in that chart that I can see, and that's fascinating. So he's got quite a different view from a number of other people there at the moment with regards to what may be happening with prices. And there is huge demand in some areas, which is still underpinning property. But I think the Melbourne story is significant, and so you've slightly tweaked this, I think, Edwin, right? Which was this one here, right? Which is the Melbourne is negative plateau, small rise. So that's your slightly tweaked version of the forecast, right?
No, that's Louis. I said, listen, I've got the show with Martin tonight. Can you send me your latest figures on if there's
Oh, okay. So
rate rise. So this is the update. Yeah, I'm just.
Okay. Yeah. So this is Louis.
No, this is me.
Yeah, I thought so. I thought it was a little bit iffy. Oh,
okay. Yeah, I don't know. What gave it away, Martin? Was it the blue? I knew I should have got the. I wasn't wearing my glasses at the time that I was filling in the little squares there. So the thing is that 2026 is going to be a very exciting year in terms of data points, because we've got AI, we're competing with AI, we're going to be competing with a lot of other people out there in the mainstream that are going to be relying on AI, and they don't really know whether or not what AI is spitting out is true, real, or made up. So this is the interesting scenario. So from the point of view of people looking at buying, looking at selling, looking at investing, so you've got to be very careful where you get your data from and where you're going to be scraping.
Yes.
Or what you're going to be scraping in order to come up with your decisions. Now, the reason why I put that there with regards to Melbourne, even if there was a rate rise, my view is that Melbourne is absolutely going to be hemorrhaging even more. I don't care what people say. I know there are people now that have been back on LinkedIn. I can, get a million and one brokers trying to sell me investment properties in Melbourne, and now also Facebook. I mean, I came back on Facebook, and my Facebook page is just, investment properties in Melbourne, Melbourne, Melbourne. But the thing is, Melbourne's hemorrhaging, and it's going to continue to hemorrhage. In my point, my view, my personal view. Mine and Dusty's point of view, because we are keeping a very close eye to the majority of the investors, which are the WeChat chatterers, and those involved in around the WeChat chatterers, and they're still wanting to leave Melbourne. The only saving grace or the Hail Mary that Melbourne's going to get is if the doors are widely open for the Silent Tigers, and they will come in droves. But even that will be that will be sort of. They'll be surprised no end because of the government policies that won't allow them to, the government with regards to gas and all those other idiocies that are going on there in Melbourne. But not only that, Martin. I think with more of an exodus of the commercial and real and industrial sector from Melbourne because of the high land taxes that investors have to pay. That's going to put a huge downward pressure on the residential property market in many parts of Melbourne, as well as the outer regions of the Melbourne region, which is where you got a lot of subdivisions and a lot of investors bought into those subdivisions, which are absolutely hemorrhaging. So that's unemployment is going to continue to rise in Melbourne more than in any other state, in my opinion, and a lot of it's going to come back over the border to New South Wales. I mean, I've already seen it. We spoke about what was going to happen with the fringes of your Penrith and your southwest regions with regards to industrial and commercial. I wish I had $1 million back then when I was predicting that prices, in some industrial complexes, they've risen by 50-60%. And that was something that you and I discussed vehemently and fervently when these new government imposts were being thrown at investors in Melbourne. So we're going to see a lot more of that. So that is my view, regardless of what happens, even if, whether rates are cut or the rates rise, Melbourne is a different beast altogether. Look, I know people are talking about, and you alluded earlier on with regards to some banks calling for a rate rise. Look, personally, Martin, with the other data points that we talk about, I don't believe that even two rate rises of 25 basis points are going to really put that much of a dent, if anything, in a lot of the property markets across a lot of many capital cities, particularly Sydney, because as you said earlier on, there are parts of Sydney and even in regional New South Wales where the markets are absolutely going ballistic. We predicted rises of 10 and 15% with a 5% deposit guarantee that the government were going to dish out, and we saw that live happening over in parts of the Blacktown and Campbelltown regions, LGAs. It was absolutely phenomenal watching properties rise in value by 10, 12, 15% within a matter of weeks. And we're going to see a lot more of that. Why? Because of all the other data points, Martin. We're not building. There's pressures on construction. There's nothing new. We're going to see a lot more of duplexes, but they're not getting any cheaper to build, and the end product is just as expensive as buying an established home on a double block of land. So it's there's too much pressure right now, and with the findings of HIA and the numbers that they're dishing out. I mean, it was 1.2. Now 1.9. What's it going to be by the end of 2026? 2.4. How many million homes are we going to really need to taper this beast down? And when are we really going to seriously start putting a dent in construction? Because I don't see any cranes. I don't see any even the high rise. Even the medium density stuff. It's not really happening. So it's really be careful what data points you pick. and who you listen to at the barbecues.
Well, that's exactly right. And I also think that my recent conversations with a couple of builders in Sydney is quite interesting. They're not the biggest builders, but, you know, they employ somewhere between 15 and 20 people, and they've got this steady pipeline, except they haven't got a steady pipeline because they can't get the economics to work. So now what they're finding is that whilst there are people who are relatively interested in them building something, and they do partly spec, but they also do, you know, one-off projects, what they're finding is that when they actually put the numbers together to what the client is actually prepared to spend versus what it costs to build the particular project, and most of these are low-rise rather than high-rise projects, they can't make the math work. So, in fact, their forward pipeline of work is very, very skinny at the moment. And in fact, one of the people I was talking to was saying he's planning potentially to lay some of his people off next year because economically his business cannot survive in the current environment with everything else that's going on at the moment, because the problem is costs of materials, costs of work and labor continuing to rise. Availability of materials is also a problem, he also mentioned as well in passing. And as a result of that, it's really hard to be able to actually make any money at all. He said, look, I can go on losing money. And he said, I made quite a lot of negative project returns this last year, but I can't go on doing that forever because the settings are completely wrong. And then cycling back around, you mentioned earlier on some of the other barriers. Well, red tape is the big one as well. So when you actually talk about some of these small businesses and what they're having to do, they've got to jump all of the hurdles with regard to planning controls and other regulations, plus the hurdles involved in just running a smaller business, you know, because you've still got to jump lots of hoops and there's more hoops coming as well. So the whole environment is not developer friendly. It's not actually small business friendly, which means that our ability to be able to meet any aspiration to build more is just being diluted. Now, of course, what's happening is the governments are sort of betting on some of these big international money players coming in and saying, well, we'll invest in another build to rent project as a way of trying to make up the numbers. But just think about it. What we're doing is we are effectively giving tax breaks to some of those international players to come in and basically be able to make a net smaller return because of the tax breaks than local players. So the playing field is being tilted dramatically away from being able to help small local builders actually survive. And I think that's a disaster. The other point I'd make, Edwin, and I'm seeing it also from my reports of various people, we are starting to now to see the first signs of something I suspected we would see, and that is some of these big international players coming in and buying up individual properties, because they're now also being encouraged by the government to effectively create property portfolios for rent as well. So in fact, it's making the situation worse because, of course, those properties are effectively being taken out of the market and are actually then being repackaged and rebundled into the rental sector at higher rents, I would add. So it's a complete disaster. The policy settings that the government has put in here are nuts. So what is the net of all this? Well, significant demand still exists. Supply is not anywhere close to sufficient. And therefore, we're going to see continued pressure on home prices. And in fact, you went over the mountains the other week, right? Over to Orange. And I think Orange is a really important case study in terms of what we're going to see ahead. Because there, of course, it's red hot, isn't it?
Yeah, and this is fascinating to listen to what people on the ground actually have to say. But for people who want to watch the video there, they can go to my Justin Property, Justin Kwan handle on X or Twitter, and you can the commentary that I give. But it's incredible, Martin, because in the last 6 weeks, 6 to 8 weeks, right, three agencies, one sold 16, another one sold 22, another one sold 26 homes. In the space of 6 weeks, three months prior, They said it would take anywhere between 8 to 12 weeks to sell a few properties here and there. And since the 5% deposit guarantee came in, things have just absolutely gone ballistic. Where now they've experienced, let's say, on the mid-range, on the mid-range scale, around what was around 650 to 750. Now you're fighting for these properties. 3 months later, you're fighting for these properties at between 850 and 900. I mean, this is the sort of stuff that the government policy has happened. The interesting thing there is that we've got the players, right? So whilst I was there, whilst I spent a few days there in Orange, I went to obviously the Saturday open homes as well, looking for clients. But we also decided to look at other in between others that weren't our clients weren't interested in. But I was more interested in to see, to just just to have a sticky beak as to see what the market's doing and talking to other agents there on the ground. And your homes in general terms between 1.1 to 1.2, you would say it's the like the more expensive part of that market. You had the majority of the people attending those open for inspections were downsizers, right? So these are people that in one home that was guiding around 1.2 to 1.3, 4 bedroom, 2 bathrooms, on about 1,000 square meter block land. It was a renovated home from the late 80s. It was nicely renovated, nothing too flash, and but it was on the top end and for their markets. And there were 8 groups of people waiting to get in before the agent arrived, and the majority of them, I would say most of them were downsizers. So when I started talking to the agents, I'm saying, look, they're downsizing from what? And saying, these are the people that lived in, lived in the fringes in on acreage. They've sold the blocks of land for 2 million, 3 million, 4 million, whatever. And now they're literally downsizing to a home in town because the infrastructure and the hospital is attracting a lot of specialists as well, so they're feeling a little bit more comfortable. So Orange is a buzzing little town in the lower range where they saw a huge rise in values as well as a huge because of the demand. It's a 50-50 split between investors and first-time buyers, first local first-time buyers, as well as first-time buyers literally coming over the mountains to because of the demand in the because of they can have jobs or work because of the delivery infrastructure that's been built there, and they've got no choice if you want to have a decent home with under $1 million with a generous block of land and in a seemingly nice part of the world. So it was just, but the phenomenon has been, well, it's not a phenomenon because you and I talked about it and we saw it here in Sydney, is these bloody government policies, to the point where they said it, just something that they hadn't seen for years. With the rental side of things, right? Well, what's really going to happen with the rental? Because a lot of investors are selling out and cashing out. And he said, when we've got 400 properties on our 400 homes on our rental books, and we've only got 3 vacancies, and rents that they're projecting rents to go up by another 10% next year in the region because there's going to be a huge demand for rental property. So it's a market that's just going to keep on moving north because of it's obviously Orange is not a small town. It's a town, but it's not that small when you think about it in comparison to a lot of others around the area. And because they've decided to really expand and build on with infrastructure. They've got the university, the expansion of the hospital, specialty doctors and so forth. So it's It was incredible, Martin, just to see. But I liken that market to what we saw in the Blacktown LGA and in the Campbelltown LGA.
Very, very interesting, Edwin. And I'm fascinated by the idea of down traders going out that way and looking for, something a bit different and competing directly with first-time buyers. I'm certainly that's a trend that I've seen in a few other areas too. It's fascinating, though, that not all markets are behaving the same way. I was looking at Thrill. I've got a particular interest in Thrill. And here the story is a bit different. This is actually the price trends for Thrill. And you can see there that it peaked up in November 2021, had a massive, significant rise. That was obviously because of post-COVID. And it's gone sort of up and down a bit, but it's pretty much gone sideways. And I was talking to an agent there this last week as well. And he's saying it's quite interesting. There's still quite a lot of demand, but they're not able to break new heights with prices in the Thurl area. And why? Because they've got to the point now where the affordability question is really biting. So there is actually a limit to how high prices can go in some of the suburbs because of affordability constraints. Now, over in Orange, because the prices are still somewhat lower, I think the affordability equation is a little bit different. And it goes back to this fundamental point. You have to go granular. You have to understand what is going on the ground. Because if you compare to Orange with Thirroul, it's chalk and cheese in terms of the trajectory. So it's really, really fascinating. And then just to overlay a little bit of another dimension, and again, this is something that you highlighted in your presentation across to me as we go into this at the moment, that where are people building and what are they building? And this is a really, really important point because you can't buy necessarily what you want to buy because they're not building what you need to buy. And this presentation here, which was on News in Sydney, is talking about where they're building and what they're building. And as you say, flood prone. What are you building? Where are you building? And how much are you paying? It's a mess, isn't it?
It is. But yeah, first point there is obviously climate change goes out the door when the brown paper when the brown paper bags emerge, right? So look, the thing is, Martin, that when you start looking at even what makes sense to build in the city in the Sydney region, and even in the fringes of the Sydney region, like in the Hawkesbury and that. Richmond and all those areas is what makes sense to build is luxury, right? Because luxury, in essence, you can put whatever price you want on it. Depending on it's all about lifestyle. It's all about presentation. It's all about bells and whistles. It's all about and you're not building a lot of as well. So there's not a it's not like you're building thousands, hundreds of thousands of the same thing. There's, you look at some of the developers that I've been talking to, and that, in the Lower North Shore, in those areas there, they're building boutique developments of, five units. One's building nine, but these are these each apartment is going to have a price tag of, tens of millions of dollars. Not they're not going to be your even your 2.3 million dollars like that we're going to see over at Darling Point and Woollahra and those areas there. So we're so what we're going to see, the developers that are going to put their hand in the pocket and build are going to be those that are going to be building for luxury and for lifestyle. Now, which really goes contrary to what the governments was seemingly were going to be doing, and that is supporting the first home buyers and supporting the greatest group of people that are in need, which were your new buyers into the market, your new entrants, the younger generation, the new families. They're really getting they're really getting left behind, and they are going to be the ones that unfortunately are going to be occupying the build to rent dog boxes that are they're going to be pushed into, because affordability is just going out the door. And the longer you leave it to build, the more it's going to cost. People that think that construction costs are gonna creep down by 20-30% have got rocks in their head. They don't understand the principle. Once the beast tastes the blood, they don't want to go back, to eating Kellogg's cornflakes. They want the juicy steaks.
Well, it's actually consistent with what we said what we said the other day. So there were examples of new developments being propagated in and around Sydney, but these are high-rise developments with the average unit price being $3 to $4 million. Now, the reason that they're at that price is because if you can actually get that much for an apartment, and you can sort of pile four or five up on a stick, as it were, on top of a tower, developers can still make money. But this is not helping housing affordability. It's not in line with what the governments said they were going to do. And everything that I see at the moment is pulling in completely opposite directions for those that the announceables were trying to communicate and convince people that the government knew what they were doing, right? I'm of the belief that they have no idea what they're doing. They are deliberately actually pulling the levers in the wrong direction at the moment. So we've got high migration, as we've discussed before. But this issue of what is being allowed to be actually built and what can actually be afforded to be built is the critical question. And as I said earlier on, the only thing that the game changer from the government's point of view is the tax breaks for these big international investors to come in to build these build to rent towers. But this isn't solving anything. It's just creating yet more issues. So I think that we are starting to see the real cracks now appearing, metaphorically as well as practically, if you look at the quality of construction. And what that means is that there is nothing here which is going to tackle housing affordability in the next 2 to 5 years. Now, that's a really salutary message, because what it means is if you're putting off a prospective property purchase on the anticipation or hope that prices are going to come back to be more affordable, you're probably kidding yourself, because the government policies are not actually doing that. And of course, Claire O'Neill, before the last election, bailed the cat, really, saying they don't want prices to actually ease back. They're expecting them to grow, quote, sustainably, whatever that means. So there's a real problem here. And I do think we need to be honest with our audience. The prospect of significant price adjustments down, unless we get a major international economic shock, is close to zero.
That's what I said earlier on, Martin, and that is, even if we saw a 50 basis points go up next year to rate hikes of 25 basis points each, I don't believe it's going to put a damper on property markets across Sydney. Now, I'm talking specifically Sydney, because Sydney is our backyard, and this is where we assist most of the clients. Needless to say, there are some regional towns that will continue to climb as well because of the demand. You look at, we're speaking about Orange. Bathurst is also on the tail end of that. Obviously, it's not as big. That doesn't have as much going for it. And then you've got Lithgow. Lithgow's in the middle of nowhere. It's closer to Sydney, yes, but it's in the middle of nowhere. I mean, you've got a jail there. That's about it. You do have fresh water. I think I don't know whether they've still got the fresh water farm there, a freshwater fish farm there. Outside of that, you've got those towns that they may dip a bit, because and not so much because of the won't be demand, but more so because the banks have got lending criteria outside of certain areas and certain regions where they will only allow maximum LVR of 80%, or in some cases 70%. So they're basically red flag certain towns for because of the risk factor that whatever the risk factor they deem to be risky, and also again pushing the population more closer to the bigger towns, the bigger central areas, for reasons of better to control the masses. We're going to see. It's going to be an interesting 2026, Martin. And looking at the numbers now, that we're definitely on the downward trend. About to close the books on 2025, but there is an interesting shift which we will talk about in the auction section. But looking at the numbers now, we're really. I think a lot of agencies have given up, and they're really because the numbers are really pulling back hard now.
Well, let's look at the numbers. So in the Sydney region on the 8th, 21,470 properties were listed, 21,470. If we jump forward to the next week, you can see there are the 15th, 20,227. So you can see there a significant fall, which I think is interesting. And if you look at the listings, including or showing the land separately, you can see that things are sliding, and they're sliding quite significantly, which is what we perhaps might have expected. On the Melbourne end of things, if you go back to the 8th of December, it was 28,641, and the week later, 27,379. So the listings, again, are going down. Brisbane, of course, well, 3,015 on the 8th. 2,771 on the 15th. I think that's probably one of the biggest drops that I've seen, Edwin, actually thinking about it, in the Brisbane market. So as we come up to the end of the year, vendors are actually pulling properties off the market. And partly, of course, it's the time of year, but I think there's something else going on here.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. Look, Melbourne, okay, when you look at the numbers in terms of the last couple of weeks, Sydney's numbers have been retracted by 1,000 to 1,200 on a weekly basis. Melbourne's retracted about 500 to 700 on a weekly basis, but Brisbane is going to be it's going to be a watch and see moment, because if those numbers don't climb back to the averages of 2025, I mean the Brisbane market's just going to continue to pick up even more speed, regardless of what people are saying that the Brisbane properties have peaked. I don't think so. I think that Brisbane's got a lot of heat, especially with as we draw closer to all these novelty events that are going to happen later on, and people are saying to me, well, if there's less construction happening in New South Wales, that means that they're building and renovation work and everything's going to be cheaper. No, because the people aren't staying here. The builders and the trades are going north, to and they're being absorbed by a lot of the government, state government and federal government projects that are really absorbing a lot of the working population. And a lot of them, sadly, a lot of my old mates are basically taking early retirement, and they themselves are involved in a lot of other ventures, a lot of other investments, because the red tape, the green tape, the blue tape, every other tape is just getting too hard in order to, as you said earlier on with regards to your conversation with those builders, it's just getting too hard and too cumbersome. And when you have to employ more people to do all your administrative duties in order to for the government to tick all the boxes before you start, and even then you've got the issues with unions and everything, it's not going to get things aren't going to get easier. And I feel sorry for the Queenslanders, because those that are trying to get into the market there, the first time buyers that have tried to get into the market there, they're even going to be under a lot more pressure, and they're only going to be forced to go further and further out, into the fringes and further and beyond the fringes of the city regions.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've done a bit of work this last week on the Brisbane market for a couple of one-to-one conversations. And it is fascinating, because even across Brisbane, there is not a uniform story. And it's the same old, same old. When you go granular, you see very significant dynamics in different parts of the place. There are still some areas where prices are not actually rising as fast as people thought they were. And there are other areas where there's huge demand and not enough supply, and there the prices are still quite strong. But the other interesting observation in the Brisbane region is when you actually look at the returns for property investments, they're not as flash as people thought they were, because, of course, everybody assumes that the Brisbane market is a great place to rent out a property. But actually, when you do the calculations and look at the net returns, even that isn't necessarily true everywhere. So, again, it's important to go granular. Now, let's just quickly touch the auctions, because you mentioned a significant change in the weather in the auction market. And I think it's just worth dwelling on this for a little bit. This is actually the data on the auctions. So you can see here for the 6th and the 13th, the numbers are coming down. But look at the 20th, as you would expect as you come up to Christmas. And the clearance rates are pretty low too. So what's going on with the auctions, Edwin?
Well, we've had early a much earlier retreat than in numbers than 2024. In 2024, we were still in the numbers slowed down. We were still around the 500 for the same week last year, and now we're on 106 or 163, which is. For me, it's all about the confidence, mate. It's all about the confidence. And if you're an auctioneer, you need to go out and start looking for another job or a part-time job, another gig, because people are waking up to the campaign. The media, the publicity around underquoting and all the shenanigans that go on around auction campaigns, NCBs, non-committed buyers, and dummy bidders and the like that we've raised on our show and across our social media platforms. A lot of that is really hitting home now, and people are waking up to the fact that the auction campaigns are pretty much cooked, and you're not going to be achieving the best price or the best result on the day because of the way that they're being manipulated and the way that they're being handled. So it's going to be watch this space for the auctioneering fraternity in 2026. But overall, Martin, as you and I have been pointing out, as much as property values have gone up and have reached ceilings in a lot of areas, and it's very hard to break through those ceilings, and this is where also people that put the properties on the market by way of auction, they feel disillusioned when they don't break through those ceilings, because people are starting to say, shit, I don't want to be the first one to break that ceiling and pay a lot more than what the previous individual paid or the purchaser paid. So all these concerns are coming home now to be front of mind, but also I think the numbers of actual properties on the market in the Sydney region, when you start comparing it to previous years, the prices have gone up a lot in many parts of Sydney. But in terms of numbers on market, they're really being small in comparison, and that puts a lot of pressure in the industry, because people have got nowhere to go. So when you don't have options, and as you and I say over and over again, and that is that people don't want to return, people don't want to downsize and be 40, 50 kilometres away from their grandkids. And because of other needs. So, I think we're going to see a lot more of this play out, Martin, next year, where I would speculate right now I'm on a 60 to 70% assurance that the numbers on market by way of auction are even going to be lower than what we saw this year.
Yes, I think that's right. And again, in one of my one-on-one conversations in the last couple of weeks, we've been exploring the why auctions don't necessarily work for vendors. And people are much more open now to actually saying, I don't want to go the auction route. I'm going to go have a more official campaign over a period of time. I've got more control over it. And I can perhaps get a better outcome without all of the shenanigans that auctions represent. So it's fascinating to watch that. I think 2026 could be the year when the auction begins to fade away into the background. Maybe, we'll see. Let's look at the rentals just briefly. So in Sydney, on the 8th, there were 12,942 properties to rent in the Sydney region as defined by Domain. A week later, 12,405 for a bit of a fall. In Melbourne, on the 8th, 11,736 compared to 11,368. So again, no surprise possibly that we're seeing the rental numbers come down a little. And I'd make the point again that the availability of rental property for people trying to find somewhere to rent at a reasonable price is almost impossible. People are still having to pay more. And the latest analyses that I've been reading suggest that we're going to see further increases in rents next year. We expect inflation to continue to be quite strong. And that's one of the reasons why perhaps rates will go up rather than down. And again, the rental sector is pretty much broken. And unfortunately, again, more people in situ, in a rental situation, are being asked to accept another rate increase next year to their rents, despite the fact they can't afford it. And that's really painful and really sad, and it's going to put a real dampener on Christmas for many people. Now, as we come to the...
With regards to the rent, I think one of the important factors there is the AML, the anti-money laundering legislation that's coming in, that's going to start really taking effect in 2026. February, they start rolling it out throughout the legal fraternity. They're going to be the first, the guinea pigs. And then they're going to be testing a lot of different systems out. Now, obviously, as we get closer to June, July, you're going to see a lot of the pressure coming onto the real estate industry. And this is where my fear in terms of there's going to be a further squeeze, and we're going to get a real idea, real indication of how much pressure there's going to, all this overpopulation has created, is when now there's going to, because of the AML, people are going to be forced to go back into, if they've got investment properties, I'm talking about the Weecha Chatters, the Silent Tigers, New Kids on the Block, the general contenders for the budget accommodation, are going to be forced to put their properties back onto the traditional ledger, which means that if you don't have 10 people in a house, if you can't have 10 people in a house anymore, we are getting charging them cash on hand by renting out beds, by bed sitting, or even by letting out rooms, by budget accommodation, and they have to go into the property ledger. So now you're going to be splitting those households potentially into two different groups. So therefore, the two groups are going to be looking for another home, right? So for other accommodation. So this is where we're going to really feel, start to feel the overpopulation side of things that the government keeps on saying, oh no, it's okay, there's nothing. Look, there's nothing here, nothing to see here. Outside of that, even Louis Christopher, in his analysis and in his figures, he's calling a rise in the rental. I think from memory, 6 to 7% increase. I'm of the opinion it's going to be a lot higher than that. Both on the scenarios of property prices going up, I'm a bit bullish than Louis. And I dare say, from your analysis and your surveys, Martin, that from what you see and what you know firsthand on the ground with your surveys, I don't think you would be you'd be in the lowest end of the scale as to rent. I think you're pretty much on the money, as you've been calling huge increases in the actual property the rental prices. It's not necessarily acknowledged by the mainstream media because, as we said before, when there's a rental increase, you don't go in and top up your bond, and they go on bonds. They don't go on the actual what people are actually paying. I mean, the bond could have been registered 2, 3, 4 years ago. people are just not willing to move around.
Yeah, well, that's the problem. The official statistics are completely screwed because of it. And when you actually look at what people are having to pay, 75% of people in the rental sector, according to my modelling and analysis, is actually in the middle of a cash flow disaster at the moment. So those rents are rising, their incomes aren't, and everything else is going up as well. And this is putting huge pressure on households. And like I said, it's going to definitely make Christmas a real problem this year. And for many people, they're really caught. And 2026, I think we'll see a perpetuation of that because nothing has changed from government. You know, governments really aren't pulling the levers the right way. Well, that's just before we end. You've got a very important tip here, and it's to do with insurance.
Yeah, look, well, I was going to share this tip last week, and I think went haywire, and I think it's very pertinent to share it this week, nonetheless. And between last week and this week, I've also been doing the round with officers that I communicate with, that I deal with, and the principals, and talking over this week more so is the insurance policies that are not covering the actual insurance policies have deleted a lot of the cover that the real estate agencies and property managers were being covered for in previous years. And cybersecurity is one of the sledgehammers that is going to hit the industry next year. We spoke about last week about the people losing carriage of the property files and losing custody of the property files by outsourcing the data collection centers to overseas, even locally in the state. Trust accounting, which is absolutely insane to outsource your trust accounting work that you have to really do in house and protect with your life more or less, but they're outsourcing all this. So cybersecurity and the AML is really going to bring the chickens home to roost. But more importantly, is you've got to ask yourself if you have properties and they're being managed. You've got to start asking the questions of the property managers. Are they fully covered in order for them to also cover you in a lot of these issues with trip hazards, with the updates of the minimum standards to your property? Safety glass in windows, labeling, are the tenants aware that it's not safety glass? All these things. Yeah, you may think that just because they have a license and they say, oh, yeah, we're insured, they've got a professional indemnity insurance cover, that you're covered as well. Let me put it to you bluntly. You're not covered, and the legislation now captures both the property manager or the real estate office and the owner of the property. So you can't, ignorance is no excuse. So you really need to ask those hard questions of your property management teams. And if you don't, well, DM me and I will put you in touch with property management teams that are making proper transitions and are looking very, very carefully at this, because it is going to be a big can of worms for many investors and landlords next year, Martin.
Yeah, the key point here is not all property managers are equal, right? And there are some doing the right thing, and some have the right systems and processes and insurances and everything else. But there are a lot of others who don't. And of course, you don't necessarily know that they don't have everything until something goes wrong, which time it's too late. So it's really important to make sure that you're comfortable that your property manager, if you're a property investor and you're using a property management company, that you are comfortable that they have the right questions, the right issues. You must ask those questions. And that includes the indemnity and the range of insurance and the other stuff. And as you said in the show the other day, where are they keeping the information? Is it still local, or is it actually being outsourced to some third party in some foreign land somewhere? Because if in fact that information is no longer resident within that particular agency, then that's a big deal too. So there's a big set of questions here for property investors. And I think that my final point on this one, everyone, is more property investors are waking up to the complexities of property investing. The returns are not necessarily as flash as people think. Whilst there are some attractive, quote unquote, tax breaks, even those are a bit more limited than they were. But these other more logistical issues, like the quality of your property manager and the capacity to which he has to operate and whether they have the right insurances and things, those are questions which more people are now beginning to wake up to. So I think for a 1990s story of property management, completely out of date now, in 2026, you have to ask a whole range of additional questions. And that's probably a good New Year resolution for those in the property investing sector.
100%, Martin. And as they say in the sporting world, I think we've got ourselves a ball game.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Edwin, for coming out on a Tuesday for a Monday rant, if that works. I'll look forward to catching up with you again next week. And meantime, take care and have a good week.
All the best, man. You take care. Cheers.